Number three goes right along with this. It's when they flip that script. When they turn the conversation around to how they feel about how you are treating them. They are now complaining that you are not listening to them and their feelings, that they feel unheard, that they feel like they don't matter. They turn themselves into the victim of you because you're so mean.
Welcome to the Covert Narcissism Podcast. I'm your host, Renee Swanson.
Do you ever listen to my podcast and wonder if I am a fly on the wall in your home? I promise I don't have any listening devices out there in the world anywhere, but there's stories. They all sound the same. It's like I have people come to me all the time and go, how do you know that this all happened? It's like you lived my life, or it's like you're watching my world. You know, not all covert narcissists are the same. But there are so many similarities. And the stories, they just line up. Yes, there's differences. Everyone is different and everybody will experience things just a little bit differently. But in the Facebook group, the Covert Narcissism Facebook group, and if you're not in there, go search for that group. It's called Covert Narcissism Group. But in that group, I read through posts and I read through these stories and I laugh because it seems like we're all living the same life. Some of them, you know, are shocking that they're similar. Like, how in the world can other people be living with a partner who doesn't let them flush the toilet? Like I made a comment about that on my podcast, and all of a sudden I get all these comments in the Facebook group going, I lived that too. And then we've got issues over a dishwasher or walking ahead of everyone. That seems to be pretty common, and it shows up repeatedly. Laughing the loudest at their own jokes or even hoarding was another common trait. So I just am blown away by all the similarities. I do want to say, though, not everyone who exhibits covert narcissism does so with the same intensity. These traits are in a range, and they range from small little glimpses to these extreme amounts. I'm Renee Swanson, your host of the Covert Narcissism Podcast, and thank you so much for joining me today. Today we are talking about 7 ways that a covert narcissist reacts when you try to tell them how you feel about something, especially if you're telling them how you feel about something that they did or didn't do. If you are watching this on YouTube or listening to this podcast, wherever you are today, please hit that subscribe button, that follow button, so that you can stay current on the material that we are providing. But not only that, you then help us to spread the word to more people. You are vital in this mission to reaching our world of people just like you who are living in this nightmare. So the first one I want to give you is instant frustration, anger, or even indignation. While covert narcissists may be extremely patient when they're grooming you, okay, they're grooming you to be their target, they can have the patience of just that's out of this world. And they're so, they're just so giving and so, you know, tolerant of anything that's going on. And they seem to just have the patience that just goes for days. But they are not known for their patience once they have you hooked, once they have moved past that love bombing phase. At this point, your feelings become a huge inconvenience to them. So now when you're trying to express your feelings over something that they did or didn't do or they said or they didn't say, they can instantly become extremely frustrated. Let's say you've had repeated conversations asking them to be responsible for the kitchen trash. You know, can you just take care of the kitchen trash? Anytime it needs to go out, you do it. I'll take care of everything else. And when the can is full, you know, just if you'll notice it and just take care of it, that'd be awesome. And they may even agree to do it. Oh yeah, I can take care of that. But it repeatedly gets overlooked. It repeatedly goes undone, you know, or they just continue to push it down, you know, knowing we can squeeze in just a little bit more so it doesn't need to go out yet. You finally give in and you're the one taking the trash out yet again. And in fact, you've been doing it yourself multiple times along with all the other kitchen work that you're doing. And you just asked them for this one simple thing. It gets incredibly frustrating. And so now you say to them, hey, would you just take the trash out when the can is full? You know, you said you would do it. Would you just do it? And you're trying to have a conversation with them about it. But they fire back. I told you I would. I'll take care of it. Just leave it alone. You don't have to be so demanding. Wow. with little to none consideration of your feelings. They just rear up at this supposed unfair treatment that they are receiving. They lack the ability to see it from your perspective. They don't acknowledge that, you know, hey, I'm sorry, I should get on top of that more. I should be taking care of it. No, instead you're met with extreme resistance. They do not realize that they're not seeing things from your perspective. And in fact, they will often tell you that they are seeing it from your perspective. However, their approach is not to see how you feel when you're in your shoes, looking at it from your side. It's how they feel in their shoes. So when you're trying to see something from somebody else's perspective, you've got to try to, you know, gain their understanding of their background, their experiences, their knowledge, their fears, their desires. Even if their desire is to have a trash can that's not smelly, you need to be able to see it from their desires. That is how you put yourself in someone else's shoes. But with a narcissist, they don't do that. It still remains their background, their experiences, their knowledge, their fears, and their desires. They're still seeing it from their shoes. Covert narcissists cannot even a little see something from your shoes. So your feelings remain incredibly frustrating to them. They remain a frustrating mystery to them. Number two is gaslighting. Now, gaslighting, we talk about a lot on this podcast. It is pretending that whatever you're accusing them of never happened, that you're just being dramatic, or that you heard it wrong, or you're just plain crazy. And this is their list of excuses. You know, I never said that I would take the trash out. Okay, that's kind of where it starts, is denial, or can start, not necessarily always. What causes you to start defending yourself? You're now defending your memory. Yeah, you did. I remember. Remember that day? Da, 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 da. You're defending your perception, and you're, in essence, defending your reality. They'll trivialize what they said or they did or they didn't do, making you feel like that you're making a big deal out of nothing. You know, they might say, "You're upset about that? Come on, really? You know, Joe never does this for his wife," or, "You know, my dad was way worse than this." These are the things that they'll say to trivialize how you're feeling. This, again, causes you to defend yourself, fighting to validate that you have a right to be upset, that you, you know, have a right to see things differently, that you have a right to be hurt, and that you have a right to express that. Or they might change the subject. "How about cleaning up the living room? You know, I go to work all day long and I just want to relax at night. Do you know I had 4 meetings today? You wouldn't believe how hard I worked." And now you're in a conversation about work and the trash just disappears from sight. Well, this forces you to continue being the bad guy if you want to hold them accountable, if you want to actually get the trash taken out and that not to be your responsibility. Again, this causes you to defend your right to be heard and your right for your feelings to matter. Passive-aggressive ways manipulate the other person, and they manipulate you without you even knowing it. You become defensive and you don't even realize the switch. Then we become frustrated with ourselves for being defensive, and then we blame ourselves for the circular conversation we're in. We might even spend a period of time believing that it is our own defensiveness that is the problem in our relationship. Number three goes right along with this. It's when they flip that script. When they turn the conversation around to how they feel about how you are treating them. They are now complaining that you are not listening to them and their feelings, that they feel unheard, that they feel like they don't matter. They turn themselves into the victim of you because you're so mean. You know, you're saying, "I feel like I do all the work around the house and I really don't want to have to remind you about the trash. Can you just take care of that?" Not being able to relate to your feelings at all or validate them in any way, they now focus entirely on their own feelings. They'll say something like, "I don't know why you have to remind me all the time. You know, I will take care of it. I sure wish you would just trust me more. It really hurts my feelings, you know, that you don't trust me. It feels so mean and I'm so sensitive to that. I think I need to just go have some alone time and I need to go lie down because, you know, it really just hurts me that you talk to me that way." Saying that you have caused them harm, saying that they are hurt. This now implies that you need to fix the problem, that you need to put in the effort, and that this is on you. The fourth way is self-deprecation. They might start saying things like, you know, hey, I'm sorry I'm such a loser, and they walk away. Or they say, nothing I ever do is ever good enough for you. I guess I just can't get anything right. They might even say, well, why did you ever marry someone as bad as me? You know, I just don't deserve you. You should leave me and I should just go suffer alone forever. All of these self-deprecating comments are very triggering to the compassionate side within you. And you start telling them how wrong they are in these statements. When they say, you know, I just can't do anything right. Yes, you do. You do this and you do that. And now you're defending the things that they do right. Your empathic nature causes you to see how your words may have hurt them. And you're triggered by these deep feelings that they seem to have of worthlessness. And you clearly don't want that. So now you feel bad about it. And you work overtime to fix it. This is a passive-aggressive way to put you back in the driver's seat to fix their feelings, to take care of them, and for them to be off the hook on the trash can that's still sitting in the kitchen. Number five is rage. They'll throw a little temper tantrum, maybe throw something or slam a door or stomp their feet around. All of this attention-seeking behavior, like a little child throwing a temper tantrum. Maybe they do take out the trash, but they, you know, aggressively move the can and they slam the lid down, maybe hit the wall with the trash can and slam the door on the way out, stomping around in the kitchen. You know, or they go upstairs to the bedroom and they slam the door in the bedroom. They are mad at you for not giving them the respect that they believe they deserve, for not valuing them more. How dare you think that I don't hold up my end of the job around here, that I don't, you know, follow through with my words and what I say I will do. How dare you suggest that they are anything less than perfect? They feel rejected. They feel called out and put on display. And rage is one of the responses to this. Number six is they will sulk and pout. This is like the opposite of that rage. Instead, they just go, you know, back to that victim mode we were talking about, and now they sulk around the house. Maybe they took the trash out, sure, but they are so clearly wounded by your unreasonable demands and expectations. And so now they'll come get in the middle of whatever you're doing and just kind of sigh. Their shoulders just sink. And they're just waiting for you to tell them, you know, something that makes them feel better. They just want all that attention. Their shoulders droop. They might as well just stick their little lower lip out. You know, my husband one time came and he laid in the middle of the kitchen floor because I wasn't giving in to his sulking. This is a type of narcissistic collapse. This occurs when the narcissistic person can no longer maintain their superior image. They cannot maintain their confidence in who they believe that they are. The threat, you know, to their self-image now comes from inside of them. They're losing their own grip on the image that they believe they are, who they believe, you know, that they portray to the world. And they lose that grip on that. And they just experience this, you know, what seems to be an extreme emotional response. They might sit in the corner and just, you know, have these silent tears coming down their cheeks, but they're just waiting for you to notice. They're making sure that they stay right there for you to give them attention. This can happen when they feel that the world no longer sees them as the person that they want to be seen as. If they believe that the world sees them as strong, confident, even caring, and something threatens this, they'll fight it. So the various little, you know, ways that we've been talking about, they'll go through these various stages to some extent. But when they reach the point that they can no longer hold on to that image, this is when a narcissistic collapse is a real possibility. What are some signs of the narcissistic collapse? This can even then turn into addictive behaviors such as drinking, gambling, or sex. It can become self-harming behaviors such as reckless driving, overeating, cutting, all of this to get the attention of you, okay, you as their target. You're going to get increased irritability, sensitivity, these angry outbursts, anxiety, depression. The last way that I want to talk about, number 7, is the silent treatment. This can go on for days on end, avoiding you, ignoring you, making a point of being in the same room with you and not answering you, not talking to you. Okay, some will withdraw hard. They might disappear even for a few days. They just spend all their time back in a bedroom. They might actually separate from you. If you're not married, if you're in a relationship, they might just, you know, they take off and go on a trip or they disappear. I guess even in a marriage, they could do that as well. Others will stay in your space and make a show of not talking to you. Okay, you might ask questions and they just totally ignore you. And then when you ask it again, they're like, oh, okay, I didn't hear you. Clearly ignoring you. Now, there is another form of this silent treatment. And that is to just never talk about the problem again. In fact, they can wake up the next morning as though nothing ever happened and move right on with life. Some people call this abuse amnesia. And they might just go straight to this instead of with that silent treatment, acting like everything is fine, ignoring the problem, no accountability, no reconciliation. So while they may be talking to you, they're certainly not talking about the problem or the way they have treated you or the way you feel. And so the silent treatment part is just that manipulative, passive-aggressive behavior just disappears. People with narcissistic personality disorder do not recognize their role in the situation. They do not self-reflect, and thus they do not realize or acknowledge in any way how they have hurt you. They just don't see it. They very well may not realize that they are acting the way that they are because they don't self-reflect. And they also don't have it within themselves to listen to you when you're trying to explain it to them. Thus, there's never any change. These cycles go over and over and over. They do not hear it from your perspective. When you are talking to them about how you feel, they are hearing how they would feel if they were in your shoes, not how you feel when you are in your shoes. They only hear it from their perspective. And this is a perspective that is full of competitiveness, jealousy, manipulativeness, guard up, self-preservation. This is the only perspective they see life from. As an empathic person, I can see how that perspective would cause me to treat people with contempt, with disdain, with sharpness, with guardedness. I can see that, and I think it's horrible. I certainly cannot relate to continuously living life that way, nor do I ever want to. I choose openness, kindness, and gentleness. See, I can see it from their perspective because that's the empathy in me. Don't ever confuse empathy for weakness. Don't ever confuse kindness for weakness. In fact, it takes great strength and courage to remain kind in this world. I wish you so much peace on your journey of healing.
You have been listening to the Covert Narcissism Podcast with your host, Renee Swanson. Be sure to check out our website at www.covertnarcissism.com. There you will find many resources just for you to help you on this journey. You can also reach out to me by email at Renee, R-E-N-E-E, at cnglifecoaching.com. Those letters are CNG as in Covert Narcissism Group. I do look forward to hearing from you. I wish you so much peace on your journey of healing.
The information provided by Renee Swanson and the Covert Narcissism Podcast is for educational purposes only and is not to be used for diagnosis purposes and not intended to be a substitute for clinical care. Please consult a healthcare provider for guidance specific to your case. This material discusses narcissism in general. It does not claim that any specific person has narcissism and should not be used to refer to any specific person as having narcissism. Permission is not granted to link to or repost this material to support an allegation or a claim that any specific person is a narcissist. That would be an unauthorized misuse of the material and information provided.